Today is Wednesday, March 27th, 2024, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. UK High Court puts Assange on the brink of extradition to the United States, by Thomas Scripps. Julian Assange has been moved a step closer to extradition to the United States. On Tuesday, the UK High Court handed down a judgment rejecting 6 of the 9 grounds for appeal advanced by Assange's lawyers and giving the United States government the opportunity to issue assurances invalidating the last 3. The court has given the U.S. government 3 weeks to indicate that Assange, quote, is permitted to rely on the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, which protects free speech, that he is not prejudiced at trial, including sentence, by reason of his nationality, that he is afforded the same First Amendment protections as a United States citizen, and that the death penalty is not imposed, end quote. If those assurances are not given, quote, then leave to appeal will be given, and there will then be an appeal hearing. If assurances are given, then the parties will have a further opportunity to make representations, and there will be a further hearing on the 20th of May, 2024, to decide if the assurances are satisfactory and to make a final decision on leave to appeal, end quote. As Julian's wife Stella explained outside the court, even this rotten ruling amounts to an admission, quote, that Julian has been exposed to a flagrant denial of his freedom of expression rights, and that he remains exposed to the death penalty. The lower court, High Court Judge Mr. Justice Swift, and the British Home Secretary all signed off on these abuses. And yet, Stella continued, what the courts have done has been to invite a political intervention from the United States to send a letter saying, it's all okay. End quote. The court's proposals are a fig leaf. U.S. prosecutors will furnish assurances as worthless as those already provided in connection with his conditions of imprisonment, even if they're not totally ignored once Assange is in the United States. The U.S. government does not need to kill Assange itself. Medical evidence has already established the significant risk of his suicide, and his health is in severe decline. A formal right to First Amendment protections is meaningless in the face of national security charges and procedures, as the UK High Court makes clear in its own legal ruling. Grounds advanced by Assange's lawyers that the UK-US extradition treaty bars extradition for a political offense are dismissed with reference to the Tony Blair Labour government's anti-democratic exclusion of this bar from the Extradition Act from 2003. Arguments that extradition would be contrary to Article 6 and 7 of the European Convention on Human Rights, to fair trial and to no punishment without law, are rejected based on various expressions of faith in the U.S. legal system. Most telling is the response to arguments asserting Assange's right to life and freedom from inhumane and degrading treatment, made in connection with the CIA plot to kidnap or assassinate him in the Ecuadorian embassy, where he had claimed political asylum. The judges do not refute the evidence, but say there is, quote, nothing to show that the conduct in relation to the embassy was connected to the extradition proceedings, end quote. In an extraordinary passage, they write that, quote, the contemplation of extreme measures against the applicant, whether poisoning, for example, or rendition, were a response to the fear that the applicant might flee to Russia. The short answer to this is that the rationale for such conduct is removed if the applicant is extradited, end quote. Any suggestion that the U.S. has not pursued Assange in good faith, says the High Court, is not arguable. Answering the case that Assange has been prosecuted as punishment for his political opinions, the judge is right. We are content to assume that the applicant acted out of political conviction and that his activities expose state involvement in serious crimes. It does not follow, however, that the request for his extradition is made on account of his political views. End quote. They cite in justification, quote, sworn evidence given by U.S. prosecutor Mr. Kronberg. He has given a detailed account of the steps that resulted in the decision to prosecute the applicant and to seek his extradition. Assange's lawyer, Mr. Summers, made it clear in terms that the applicant does not accuse Mr. Kronberg of dishonesty. That, in itself, is fatal to this aspect of the applicant's case. End quote. The largest section of the judgment deals with Assange's appeal under Article 10, the right to freedom of expression. The sole point on which the judges required additional assurances from the U.S. government was whether Assange would be granted equivalent protections under the First Amendment. Both Kronberg and former CIA Director Mike Pompeo have said openly these may be denied. Every other argument was rejected, including protection for whistleblowers and journalists who reveal information for criminal wrongdoing, especially state crimes. The judges write that Article 10, quote, is a qualified, not an absolute right. It is necessary to balance the public interest in publication against the legitimate aims pursued by legislation that is intended to protect national security. They cite significant harm caused to some of the human sources named in release documents, relying on unsubstantiated assertions by U.S. officials that, quote, harms such as loss of confidence in the state intelligence services, end quote. The public interest served by Assange's work is met with the response that his, quote, activities did not accord with the tenets of responsible journalism, and the ludicrous assertion that, quote, the respondent, the U.S. government, does not seek to prosecute the applicant in respect of those matters, end quote. This absurd claim is justified on the basis that the starting point, as Mr. Kronberg has explained, is that each of the publication charges, counts 15 to 17, is explicitly limited to documents that contain the names of human intelligence services. End quote. The fact that it was not Assange who was responsible for the initial public release of unredacted documents containing the names of U.S. agents and informants, but Guardian journalist David Lay and other websites, is brushed aside with the statement, quote, those who published the identities of human sources could only do so because he had provided them with names. This does not provide the applicant with a public interest justification for publishing them too. End quote. As to the venal role of the corporate media to impugn Assange's lack of responsible journalism, the judges refer, as did the district judge, to the views expressed by the press itself, including by The Guardian, The New York Times, El País, Der Spiegel, and Le Monde. End quote. Tuesday's judgment makes abundantly clear that the British courts and governments are intent on rendering Assange to the United States, where his life is in danger. Assange's prosecutors are driven by the need to silence not only him, but all opponents of imperialist war. The effort to extradite Assange is now being led by the Biden administration as it escalates the U.S.-NATO war against Russia and supports the genocide in Gaza. In a statement posted on X Twitter, after the court ruling, Socialist Equality Party U.S. presidential candidate Joseph Kishore stated that both the Democrats and Republicans support the campaign against Assange. The president changes, but Assange's fate remains. Kishore added, it is in the working class that the fight to defend Assange must be based. The defense of democratic rights is the fight against imperialism, and the fight against imperialism is the fight against capitalism. End quote. No purely legal bloc can be put on his persecution. The essential task posed before Assange's supporters is to link his defense to the mass movement emerging in opposition to these crimes. The same eruption of militarism and aggression, fueling the pursuit of Assange, is simultaneously producing a mass radicalization among workers and young people, revolted by the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians, and increasingly aware of the danger of a regional war in the Middle East, and even a nuclear war in Europe. It is in alliance with this social force that the campaign for Assange's freedom can be fought and won. Baltimore area bridge collapses following collision with cargo vessel, by Tom Hall. The Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland, collapsed into the Chesapeake Bay early Tuesday morning after a massive container ship crashed into one of the bridge's main supporting columns. 8 roadway repairmen were working on the bridge at the time of the collapse. 2 were rescued, including one with serious injuries. The remaining 6 are still missing and presumed dead. All 6 victims were immigrant workers from Central America who worked for a contractor doing repairs on the bridge's roadway. On Tuesday evening, divers stopped their search and rescue efforts due to icy cold water temperatures, near zero visibility underwater, and the dangers posed by a mangled metal structure and the potential that containers could fall off the damaged ship. Investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board, the NTSB, will reportedly travel to the ship on Wednesday to conduct interviews with the 22 crew members on the vessel, who have all been accounted for. The bridge is 1.6 miles long, 2.6 kilometers, and is the second longest in the metro Baltimore area. It crosses a key shipping channel used by all shipping traffic in and out of the port of Baltimore, which is now shut down for the time being. The port of Baltimore is the largest port for automobiles in the U.S., as well as a major port for coal and agricultural equipment. The bridge is used by 30,000 people each day, and many rely on it to get to work, including at the major industrial area of Sparrows Point, just east of the bridge. Details of the catastrophe are still emerging, but what is known so far is that the 95,000-ton container ship MV Dali, flying the Singaporean flag, lost power on approach to the bridge at 1:30 in the morning local time, less than half an hour into its voyage from Baltimore to Colombo, Sri Lanka. At that point, the ship was under the control of a local pilot, whose job is to bring ships through the channel in order to avoid accidents such as what occurred. It is unknown as to, of this writing, whether the ship's steering was affected by the power outage. The ship dropped its port anchor at some point, but it is not known whether this occurred before or after the collision. According to a port livestream capturing the accident, power appeared to have been restored only seconds before the collision. The Dali then struck the concrete column, also known as a pier, which rests on soil underwater and is part of the foundation. This caused the entire structure to collapse almost instantly. Officials say traffic onto the bridge was halted after a distress call from the ship. Livestream footage, however, showed several vehicles passing over the bridge only moments before its collapse. Sonar also revealed multiple vehicles are in the bay. More details will emerge in the coming days, but it is already the worst bridge collapse due to a ship collision in nearly half a century in the U.S. In 1980, the Skyway Bridge in Tampa, Florida, collapsed after being struck by a 20,000-ton freighter, causing the deaths of 35 people. In particular, the role of Maersk, the global shipping giant which chartered the Dali, and the ship's Singaporean operator, Synergy Group, will come into clear focus. The Synergy Group has been implicated in three deadly accidents since 2018, including a collision last year in the Philippines which killed two sailors. The Dali itself was recently cited for a propulsion issue and was involved in another crash in 2016. What is certain at this point is that totally inadequate safety measures, inevitably the result of cost-cutting and profiteering, played a central role in the disaster. In addition to issues surrounding the ship's systems, there were few safety measures in place to prevent collisions from occurring with the bridge. There were no tugboats to accompany ships passing under it, for example, to assist with maneuvering in case of a loss of steering. The engineering measures taken to protect the bridge itself against collisions also appears to have been totally inadequate. Quote, "There are donut-shaped objects known as bridge pier bumpers that can minimize the shock when you have this kind of a hit," civil engineering professor Hota Gangaro told WVU Today. "They're not common in the United States, but they're quite common in China. And my lab has helped design a composite bumper, which has a better shock-absorbing capability." End quote. Similar objects were installed when the Skyway Bridge was rebuilt. There may have to be somewhat more stringent specifications to account for these kinds of incidents, he concluded. It could be time to accept that more regulation is going to cost more money. While we cannot totally prevent accidents like these, at least we can minimize the damage, not only from the bridge design point of view, but also by developing novel bumpers for surrounding bridge piers. End quote. The state of Maryland was reportedly planning major upgrades to the bridge that included protections for the piers, starting in the summer of 2025. Reuters reported, the Maryland Transportation Agency planned to replace the bridge's deck and install a fiberglass jacket protection system at the water pier columns, an agency report says. End quote. Profit-driven disasters. The Francis Scott Key Bridge was completed in 1977, before the advent of much larger ocean-going freighters, which form the backbone of world trade today. The largest ship ever to visit the port of Baltimore, the Evermax, weighs more than 163,000 tons and can carry more than 15,000 20-foot equivalents, TEU, cargo containers. Such disasters are inevitable in a society where all decisions are totally subordinated to profit interest. Last Monday, March 18th, the 145,000-ton YM Witness knocked out four cranes following a collision at the Turkish port of Evian. The same day, a worker died at the port of Los Angeles after being struck by a forklift. In 2021, the 220,000-ton Ever Given struck the side of the Suez Canal, blocking one of the world's most critical shipping lanes for nearly a week. While the economic impact of the Baltimore disaster is not as severe, it still has substantial repercussions for U.S. shipping on the East Coast. While such disasters are a global reality, they are particularly prominent in the U.S. The rationale and progressive use of the resources of the world's richest country is stymied by the unprecedented concentration of wealth in the hands of the billionaires and massive corporations. According to a 2018 report to the World Association for Waterborne Transport Infrastructure, 18 of the world's 35 ship or barge collision with bridges between 1960 and 2015 took place in the United States. The 2021 Infrastructure Report Card by the American Society of Civil Engineers gave America's bridges a C grade, noting that 42% of the country's bridges are over 50 years old, and 7.5% are in poor condition. The estimated backlog of repairs is $125 billion. But at current rates, all currently necessary repairs will not be completed until 2071. Cover-up already underway. On Saturday, President Biden signed a spending bill providing for 6.5 times that amount, or $825 billion, in military spending for just the next year, underscoring that limitless resources are being redirected towards war. On Tuesday afternoon, Biden spoke for a little more than 5 minutes, in which he pledged that the federal government would front the entire cost of rebuilding the bridge and returning the port to normal operations as fast as possible. Predictably, Biden said nothing about the lack of safety precautions on the bridge and the otherwise miserable state of infrastructure in the U.S. He also has a long record of preventing corporations from paying for the disasters they create. Last month, Biden visited East Palestine, Ohio, for only the first time after a train derailment and deliberate and completely unnecessary release of toxic chemicals by Norfolk Southern that poisoned the entire town. To date, not a single person has been held criminally responsible for the disaster, made inevitable by relentless cost-cutting across the entire railroad industry, and residents have been largely left on their own. To the extent that promised federal assistance materializes, this would be more due to geopolitical than humanitarian considerations. The closure of the Port of Baltimore for any significant length of time would jeopardize the global operations of U.S. automakers, which is seen as key to the growing trade war with China. The continued operation of the ports is also a major military question, as they are used to transfer weapons and equipment to battlefields across the world. Biden's domestic policy is dominated by preparations for a third world war, as evidenced by his repeated invocations of the so-called arsenal of democracy, or the war economy during World War II. Far from fighting for democracy, U.S. imperialism's aim was then and is now the domination of American capitalism. A decisive element of war production was the trade union signing the No-Strike Pledge, which Biden is replicating today by working closely with the union bureaucracy. It is significant that the disaster in Baltimore comes shortly before the expiration of the contract for East Coast dock workers at the end of September. The International Longshoremen Association, the ILA, while claiming it is prepared to strike, is no doubt in close touch with the White House, like its West Coast counterpart in the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU, was before imposing a sellout last year. Jerry White, SCP candidate for vice president, responds. In response to Tuesday's disaster, the Socialist Equality Party's vice presidential candidate, Jerry White, issued a statement which declared in part, "Tuesday's collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore and the deaths of at least 6 workers is a disaster that exposes the real state of American capitalism. The corporate and government officials whose negligence led to this disaster must be held fully accountable, and all those affected by this disaster must be made whole. The surviving family members of the 6 immigrant workers who were tragically killed must be provided economic security for the rest of their lives. Workers can have no confidence that a real investigation into the cause of this disaster will be carried out by the Biden administration, the governor of Maryland, the myriad of federal and state agencies, or the trade union bureaucracies. That is why I call for rank-and-file maritime dock construction and public sector workers to organize an independent investigation in collaboration with trusted engineers and safety experts who are dedicated to bringing out the truth." The catastrophe Tuesday morning expresses the collision between the needs of a modern mass society and the outmoded capitalist system. The Port of Baltimore is a crucial node in the world economy, whose growth has made possible incredible advances in productivity, as well as in science, technology, all of which could be used to make such disasters a thing of the past. Instead, the tens of trillions of dollars created by the global working class are used to enrich the corporate oligarchy and defend its interests through wars abroad and repression at home. The question is not a lack of resources, but who controls them. The giant shipping companies and major corporations must be transformed into public utilities, collectively owned and democratically controlled by the working class. The ill-gotten fortunes of the financial oligarchy must be expropriated and the military-industrial complex dismantled. By taking political power into its own hands, the working class will be able to allocate the necessary resources to upgrade and construct bridges, ports, roadways, airports, and other critical infrastructure necessary for a thriving, safe, and sustainable world economy. End quote. Terrorist Attack in Moscow, The Ukrainian Trail, by Peter Schwarz. 5 days after the terrible terrorist attack on a rock concert in Moscow, which claimed at least 137 lives and injured over 180 people, the Western press has largely been whipped into line. Although little is known about the perpetrators and the background of the act, all comments claim that the Islamic State, IS, committed the attack, and that this excludes any responsibility and complicity of Ukraine and the NATO powers. The commentators can hardly hide their satisfaction with the attack. Quote, "The Putin regime tries to legitimize its rule by claiming that it effectively protects the population from all external and internal enemies," wrote the German-Swiss Neue Zürcher Zeitung. Now there is, quote, "a blatant failure. Putin is scapegoating Ukraine to distract from his failure." Quote, "So why is Putin spreading the Ukraine scent?" wonders the German publication T-Online. Quote, "Because the supposedly strong man in the Kremlin has failed in his great promise to protect his people. Putin misuses terror in Moscow to justify Moscow's terror in Ukraine. Totally unscrupulous." End quote. There are dozens of similar commentaries echoing the same tone. This shows how much the supposedly democratic media have put themselves at the service of war propaganda. In fact, the attack has, quote, "the mark of the CIA and its proxies in Kiev all over it," as the World Socialist website has noted. If ISIS or one of its offshoots actually committed the attack in Moscow, this does not speak against, but for the complicity of Ukraine and NATO. Ever since the CIA set up Al-Qaeda, led by Osama bin Laden, in Afghanistan in the 1980s to fight Soviet troops, the U.S. has repeatedly used Islamist terrorist groups to achieve its imperialist goals, including IS. Hundreds of Islamists from the Caucasus and Central Asia are currently operating in Ukraine. Having gained combat experience in IS, they are continuing their fight against Russia with official cover from the army and intelligence services, including behind enemy lines. Hardly anything about this is mentioned in the Western media. One of the few exceptions is the article "Traces of Ukraine," published by the Süddeutsche Zeitung on 23rd of March. Its longtime foreign correspondent, Thomas Avenarius, concludes that the speculation that the Ukrainian secret services used Caucasian radicals from the IS network, quote, "to make a fool of Putin before the Russians and the whole world a few days before his pseudo-election as president," could, quote, make sense. In the war against the Russian aggressive warriors, legions of Caucasian Muslims and Russian volunteers fight alongside the Ukrainian army. There are reportedly hundreds, reports Avenarius. They came from Caucasus regions belonging to Russia, such as Chechnya, Ingushetia, or Dagestan. many fought against the Russians in Chechnya and, quote, then became part of the IS terror network in the wars and uprisings in the Arab world. 2 decades later, anti-Putin fighters from the Caucasus continue their lost war in Ukraine, Avenarius stated. He goes on, many were already radicalized Islamists in the Chechen War and later fought in Syria against the Assad regime, which was allied with Moscow. During this time, they often joined IS. End quote. Avenarius is in a position to know. He was a Moscow and Middle East correspondent for the Süddeutsche Zeitung for many years and wrote an award-winning report on the Second Chechen War in 2003. The attack on the Crocus City Hall in Moscow marks a new stage in the NATO war against Russia. It comes at a time when the Ukrainian army is facing defeat, and NATO is pushing to escalate the war, including deploying its own ground forces and pushing deep into Russia's interior. As the WSWS has stated, the attack in Moscow has 3 objectives. First, to embolden opposition to the Putin regime within the oligarchy and the state apparatus. Second, to provoke a military response by the Kremlin that can serve as the pretext for a further escalation of the war by NATO. And third, to foster ethnic and religious tensions within Russia that would destabilize the regime and facilitate the carve-up of the entire region by the imperialist powers. End quote. The terrorist attack has been accompanied by an intensification of Western war propaganda. It recognized no red lines and consciously accepts the risk of a nuclear escalation that threatens to destroy all of Europe and large parts of the world. Typical was a guest article by Ben Hodges, the former commander of the U.S. land forces in Europe, published by the Süddeutsche Zeitung on Sunday. Hodges accused U.S. President Joe Biden of not being determined enough to support Ukraine. The U.S. and its allies must declare Ukraine's victory as their strategic goal, make annexed Crimea untenable for the Russians, and make arms production for Ukraine a priority, he demanded. The commander-in-chief of Germany's armed forces, the Bundeswehr, Inspector General Carsten Breuer, has repeated his demand that Germany must be ready for war in 5 years and be able to wage war against Russia. The Bundeswehr Special Fund of 100 billion euros, which was adopted 2 years ago, is merely startup financing for rearming the Bundeswehr. What is needed is a consolidation of defense spending, as well as the development of an effective missile defense. The effort to make Germany fit for war is not limited to the military sector. One federal ministry after another is subordinating its work to this goal. Federal Minister of Education Bettina Stark-Watzinger from the Free Democrats intends to send young military officers to schools and introduce civil defense exercises in the event of war. Universities should, in principle, be open to military research. Health Minister Karl Lauterbach from the Social Democrats, the SPD, intends to prepare the German healthcare system for military conflicts. He has announced a corresponding draft law for the summer. It would be silly to say that we're not preparing for a military conflict, and then it will not come, he told the Osnabrücker Zeitung. Doing nothing is not an option. We also need a new era for healthcare, especially since, in case of a situation where an ally needs support, Germany could also become a hub for the care of injured and wounded from other countries. End quote. At a conference in Berlin, Economics Minister Robert Habeck of the Greens declared that the land war had returned to Europe. For this reason, arms production would have to be ramped up, and the deployment scenarios for national defense would have to be reactivated. And that will come at a price. We have to be clear about that. Interior Minister Nancy Faeser of the SPD is combining anti-Russian war propaganda with a systematic buildup of state repression domestically aimed at suppressing resistance to war and social cuts. She accused Russia of hybrid warfare. We see attempts to influence through lies, through massive disinformation. She told the Süddeutsche Zeitung. Spies are also active, she added. At the same time, she accused the Kremlin of deliberately promoting refugee movements and destabilizing the West with migration. Quote, "We are actually experiencing a new dimension of threats posed by Russian aggression." End quote. The German government will arm itself more strongly against Russia's influence in Western Europe, she said. Artificial intelligence will be used against disinformation campaigns. A new early detection unit against fake news in the Interior Ministry is supposed to expose lies before they, quote, "become a big wave and flood the internet," Faeser said. In practice, this amounts to censoring unwanted views on social media. At the same time, the police presence in public areas is being strengthened under the pretext of preventing Islamist attacks. In France, the government even declared the highest terror warning level on Sunday. Heavily armed soldiers are now again patrolling train stations, airports, and other public places. 85 years after the invasion of Poland and the beginning of the Second World War, the German ruling class is returning to its criminal, militarist traditions. This madness is supported by all parties represented in parliament. It can only be stopped by an independent movement of the international working class that combines opposition to war with the struggle against its cause, capitalism. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.